Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Janie Vaught. She is an alternative communicator, psychic, intuitive dream channel, and she has been working for the last 13 years in private practice with clients, and she is now stepping out into a more public format. I believe she started her spiritual quest when she had a near-death experience, which we will obviously be able to hear about. Are you there, Janie?
I'm very well. How are you?
Fine. Now, have I got this right? Are you a Janie or a Janie?
Janie.
It is Janie. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it must
Funny
be
spelling.
Fine. Right. Can you hear me okay? Hello?
Yes, hello. Okay.
Oh, you can hear me all right?
Yes, I can.
Okay, that's fine. You heard me mention that your spiritual quest probably started with your near-death experience, which I gather goes back to 1984, and it apparently changed you. I believe you've got quite a story to tell in that connection, so take your time and tell us all about it.
Okay, I was born with kind of the gift. You know, I could know things and was very intuitive as a child. But in 1984, I had a near death, and I went out of my body, of course. But it was very different. I didn't have a tunnel and the guides waiting for me. I exited my body. I was in the surgery room, and then I flew through the stars and went through the Milky Way, and I ascended into a silvery orb, which was a brilliant garden, and all those beautiful things you hear about, the tree and the crystal water. I was gone for a long time during this surgery and operation, and I returned through to my body through a tunnel with a light. It's very interesting. And like a lot of near-death people, I didn't tell a lot of people, you know, even my husband. I just kept it quiet and to myself. But what was happening were some amazing experiences. We were living on a ranch. I would have birds come and tap on the window. Rocks fly at me and fly onto the windows.
Yeah.
And if there was an animal around, I would have, like if I got to the horse corral, I would have all of the horses would come to me. And so I was having these really amazing experiences. And one of the experiences I had was at night. I called it the spirit parade. I would lie down with my infant son, and people would walk through the walls, thousands and thousands of spirits. And they would come by, and they would, like, give me a blessing and say hello and look at me and look at the baby, and they'd pass through the walls. And this would last for hours, until I would fall asleep. And the marriage didn't last. I had changed. And I tried not to have my journey for a lot of years. But I couldn't stop not having my journey because I would know things. I would touch things. Just amazing things were happening until finally I surrendered. And I just let my journey unfold and experience what I needed to do. And how I kind of got into this gift, opening this gift up with being able to communicate with people that cannot talk, was that I was taught by a tribe in northern Arizona to use a healing stone. And with this stone, I tapped into some kind of energy that really broke that open. I could fully hear and communicate animals, birds, sometimes even plants, people, infants, people in coma. And I was called once by a group of people in a town in Colorado that a beloved friend had been hit by a car, and he had had a severe brain injury, and he was being transported to a unit where he would just be maintained. They bought my flight. I came up into this town, and I built a sweat lodge, and I did the stone, and I actually put onto practice, how do I reach this person? And one of the things I do know is you set a powerful intention of love and no harm. And I set this intention, and with the group of these people, we called out to him to choose that there was love here for him, but whatever his choice was, we were there for him. We did this amazing ceremony, got done, got cleaned up, went to the hospital, and he came running down the hall at me. I've never seen him. And at the exact time that we were praying, he had woke up from his vegetated state. He had gotten very thrashing around, even had to time down. Finally, he came into his mind. And he came running up to me, and I'll call him Bob for confidential. And he said, "I'm Bob. I know you." And I said, "Well, you've never met me, but you do know me." I said, "Bob, you're a really good listener." And he said, "I am, aren't I?" And Bob now lives a completely normal life. So this was a big aha moment with me about just using this breakthrough gift.
That's wonderful. Wasn't it a little bit scary in the beginnings when things started to come your way, like rocks and things like that, or were you somehow subconsciously prepared for it?
A little bit prepared, not really. You know, it's really a little disturbing when you have, you know, a flock of birds and they all want to get in your house.
Yeah.
Or, and another thing that happened that still happens for no apparent reason that I can tell is that people will walk up to me and want to touch me and just put their hand on me. Even in a restaurant, people will walk up and hand a piece of paper to me and say, "Pray for my husband, he's sick."
Well,
you know, and it always amazes me. There's some kind of that other connection that people get, that vibe, frequency, whatever it is, that happens. And I have used the gift when people call on me to with beloved people who are either in a natural coma or a chemically induced coma for they're being treated for something. You know, sometimes the hospital will put them in a coma as part of their healing process. And what I have found is that I can communicate even through the chemical comas. And in fact, very profoundly through those.
That's amazing, yes. Now, I'd still like to get back to this first experience because I've got another question there. You did mention that you were taken around the earth and shown sacred places and how they connect with the stars and the Milky Way.
Yes.
Tell us what you learned about that.
Well, I've been to many of the places. And remember, I knew I was not alone and I did not see anyone. I just always knew I was being guided. And it was absolute a blissful experience. But I was flown around the planet, and I was shown these sacred sites. And the very first one was the sacred medicine wheel on Medicine Mountain in the Bighorns of Wyoming. That was the first one. And out of the spokes of this ancient medicine wheel, there were the other connections. There was the pyramids. There was the pyramids in Mexico. There was lagoons and waters off of Hawaii. There was the North and South Pole. There was the sacred places in Tibet. And even places that we don't really know that aren't, like, popular, if you will.
Mm.
And how this was like a beautiful lines of colored light would connect one site to the other. And the other thing that they did is that they connected upward to the stars through the Milky Way. And how this grid was very dimensional. And when I, after my near death, we got a new job, and we were taken to Wyoming. And I had seen this medicine wheel, knew nothing about it, didn't know where it was. And I just took my children to the library, and there in the library, in an archaeological, they had it under glass, and it was the medicine wheel. And I walked up to it, and I looked. And my legs almost didn't hold me up. I couldn't believe what I was looking at. I knew that. I went to the librarian, and I was said, "Where is that?" And she goes, "Oh, you just drive up the mountain. It's right here." So Spirit had moved me right next to that medicine wheel. And when I first experienced the wheel, as I drove up there, I knew nothing about ceremony or anything. I walked up to it, and I held on. At that time, there was a fence around it, and all these prayer ties and feathers, and I knew it was really, really powerful. I held on to the fence, and I said, I know this is part of some bigger, bigger picture, and I just want to be part of it. And I experienced what I will say is levitation. I felt myself coming back out of my body through my chest. I was literally holding on to this fence to keep from flying away, if you will. Yeah. And it has been like that on this journey. I mean, my little thing is, I go on a hike and I meet people and they go, oh, we've been waiting for you. And it has just always been that way. I feel like I'm just kind of walking along, and Spirit has plans, and I meet them along the way. And it really is amazing.
Yes. You did mention that you actually met one of your teachers who said he had been waiting for you. Tell us about that particular experience.
I was on Vision Quest in the Supai, which is a large canyon in northern Arizona where the waters of the Grand Canyon come through, and it's beautiful water. And I had hiked in there and intending to, and I did. I spent 3 days in solitude, and this man came and he said, well, you need to go up. They run a sweat lodge up over here, you know. And I said, well, okay, that would be wonderful. Well, when he meant up here, I had to climb a rock wall, you know, and I'm like, I don't know how to rock climb. And, you know, he said, go behind the, you just hike, follow this trail, and you'll see the plum tree, and then the burial ground is there, and follow the path, and then you go up, and then you'll see the smoke. Well, go up was, like, way up. And I realized there was little hand and finger holes on this, you know. So I carefully, I climbed the face of this rock. It was amazing. I mean, and it was one of those moments where you want to cheer when you get to the top, because I never in my mind thought I would do something like that. And it was interesting. There was a gold dog, a golden colored dog, waiting for me at the top. She turned around and took off, and I just followed her down this trail, and she took me right to the sweat lodge. Standing around the fire were three men. And I walked up, and I kind of introduced myself, and the head man walked up, and he said, we've been waiting for you. And I turned around and looked. I'm sure there was someone else there. Was it me they were talking about? And they said, no, you're the woman with the feather. And I said, well, yeah, I have an eagle feather tattooed on my right shoulder. And he goes, yes, we've been waiting for you. I have to give you this teaching, this information. It is very important. And that's when he taught me to use and to make and to use a healing stone, which was the breakthrough that brought the man out of the coma in Colorado.
All right.
One of many times.
Right, when you say a healing stone, do you take what other people may see as a simple, ordinary stone that you find lying around, and then do you energize it?
Yes, and in fact it was. It was a piece of lava. The salt, about the size of a cantaloupe. And he energized it. He took me aside, and he said, when you are ready for this stone, you tell your fire tender that you want the healing stone brought in. And when you put it in the fire in a sacred manner, of course, he rubbed it with certain herbs, and we did prayers, which is confidential. He taught me how to do it. And when you put it in the fire, they know that that stone is intended for healing. And so intuitively, it felt like during the ceremony in Colorado for this man that it was to come in the third round, which, you know, would give us time to work. And as soon as that stone came in, the fire tender brought it in, it was brilliant, brilliant, glowing red.
Yes.
And we set it right in the middle. And what he had taught me to do is that you don't touch it, but you place your hands outside of it, and you pull that heat, those prayers, into your hands. And then you can place your hands on, if you have maybe a patient, and that's what they would call them, someone who needs healing that's in the lodge, you can place your hands on them, and everybody in the lodge can participate. we did that. But what we really did is we pulled that energy out, and all these people really love this man. And what we did is we sent it to him in a prayer, and it actually came out more like a shout, you know. Mm-hmm. What the combined energy of everyone there seemed to break through the haze that he was in and brought him awake. And to this day, the man does not have any problems. Which, to me, it's totally
wonderful.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's certainly a bit different to most of the healing methods that I've been acquainted with. Now, you're obviously very attracted to the Indian culture. Are you aware, for example, that you've perhaps come from one of these tribes in a distant past? Have you worked with them before?
Yes, I'm a mixed blood. My parents are Cherokee, both of them. They are spirits now. My family walked the trail many generations ago and wound up in Jasper and Dover, Arkansas, and were farmers there. Mm-hmm. And my grandmothers were the midwives and the grannies, or the healers. It was very common for me to, for grandma to go, you know, make herbal treatments or poultices. And all the children were born at home, very different. That's how I was raised, you know. So yes. It's very natural for me, although I do honor and practice many different spiritual traditions, because what I find is they all offer such a richness on our journey. They just uplift us and help us, you know, to be all that we need to be.
Yes, yes. Now, you've given yourself the name Alternative Communicator, which is your ability to communicate with those who cannot speak, such as in a coma, infants, when someone's had a stroke, and even a premature baby. How do you approach that with these different types of conditions? I mean, how do you do it?
Well, first of all, the person's family or whoever will contact me, and that's always, to me, miraculous about how that connection happens. Because, you know, they just somehow find me. And my intention is always to be very gentle, because they're in such a delicate state, is to not go in and, you don't go in and, you know, aggressive and, you know, demand anything. Sometimes there's a soul retrieval, and you bring some of the family members together, and usually their soul will respond to a family member's voice and will do prayer, and I will assist them in calling the person back, bringing them, doing a soul retrieval, gently bringing them back. And if I have the ability to touch them, if I can go to the hospital, or I can, it actually can happen on the phone too, as long as the person on the other line can touch them. Like, I'm on the phone, they're on the phone, and their beloved person is touching them.
Yeah.
It's a little clearer if I can physically touch them. And it doesn't take long. My intention is that I set down tethers. I set down tethers deep into the earth for this person to bring them back so we can start talking. Because often they're in other dimensions. And one of the things people don't realize is often people in coma can hear. I know when I had my near death, everything was gone, but my hearing was extremely acute. And they can hear. And I just go in, and sometimes I talk to them with my voice, or I talk to them with my mind. And I just tell them that all the people who love them are here, and that we are making a pathway for them to come back in for their higher good. And it's quite amazing what they will tell you. Some of them will tell you, often I see them floating in water. They're like in the beautiful water, and they're floating, and their hair is free, and their body is free. And then when I see them start to respond, often they will be sitting up in a more alert position. They'll be sitting up. And I just go in there and talk to them. Do you want to wake up? It's always free will. do you want to come forward? You know, what do you need? And, I mean, they'll tell you the simple things is that they might be hungry or thirsty. They might want, you know, something is actually hurting in their body. They might say something like, my right finger really hurts. And who would know? You don't know.
Yes.
And they will start telling you things, and they will actually, what we have found by watching the machines is that oftentimes their stats on the machines will get better as you start talking to them. And they'll start, if they're on a respirator, they won't fight the respirator and different things like that. Mm-hmm. And one case, the woman actually told me, she says, I'm going to be awake on Friday. And they had not given her 24 hours to live. And it was like 4 days away. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be awake on Friday, and I'm leaving soon after that. Well, I told the family. she tells me she's going to be awake on Friday. And a lot of people will roll their eyes or, you know, and I'm saying, no, you have to believe. You really, part of her or their experience is very deeply tied with you. And, you know, she was awake on Friday. And she left in 3 days after that. They know, and sometimes they just need to have that thread of energy thrust out there, like a lifeline, or if you will, and the tether for them to come in. And it's, to me, it's always miraculous and amazing.
Mm. I suppose it would follow that if the spirit inside the physical body actually became disconnected, the physical body would die. So all the time, say, for example, someone's in a coma, you would say, quite rightly from your experience, that the soul is still in touch.
Yes, it is. Very much is. And you know, it's interesting. Sometimes I'll walk into the situation and they're actually standing, if you will, through the, you know, seeing in the different dimensions, seeing someone. They will be actually standing by themselves. They'll be standing by their body. Mm. And I find that very interesting. They're almost as an observer watching things that are going on. I've had situations where literally just being in a grocery store and saw a young man who had cerebral palsy in a wheelchair, and he was meticulously tended to. And his mother and father were taking care of him. And he saw me, and he got very agitated. So I did just walked up close, and in my mind, I said, I can talk to you. And he started talking, and he said, I love my parents so much. And he was probably in his 20s. And he said, I am in a state of constant bliss. And my agreement with these two souls who take care of me, this was arranged before I even got here, that the lessons they're learning are more profound than the lessons that he's learning. Mm. And, you know, it was such a huge piece. They already knew all that information. It was a message for me. It's a little bit of teaching that he was sharing with me because the people involved already knew. So this can happen, like, anywhere, anytime. I always find that quite amazing.
Yeah.
At the airport, wherever.
It's the most interesting and useful gift to have. Now, you talk about personal energy clearing, that is, home and work clearing. Do you mean by that clearing away, say, for example, negative energies?
Yeah, I actually call it, some of it's ghost busting, you know. I have a really funny sense of humor, and, but, you know, I because, you know, it is, you have to keep a sense of humor about all things, because sometimes it's just so serious. I've been called in on some very, very strange and powerful clearings of buildings, and people's homes, workplaces. And sometimes, you know, there's just a negative flat zone with some buildings. You know, why next to it there will be a thriving business, and why in this business, no matter what goes in, nothing ever success, you know? Mm. And, you know, some of that's just a negative site, maybe where it was built, ever how it was built, some energies that were are still hanging around, if you will, you know. But I didn't know I could talk to inanimate objects. You know, I knew I could get impressions by touching jewelry and those kind of things, which is, you know, kind of anybody can do that. But I was called in to do clear this large hotel that has had that same thing. A wonderful business would go in. It was a very old hotel from the 1800s in a Colorado town. And they would, wonderful business would go in, and they just couldn't keep it going. So I said, okay, you know, and I walked up, and I put my hand on the doorpost, and I mean, this house just yelled. Well, it was a large building, and it said, I'm not a hotel, I'm the house. And I said to the owner, I said, well, it says it's the house. And as I walked around, it was just like going to the movies. I saw things happening on the veranda. I said there were hangings on the veranda. There was a little spirit of a little girl running around. I mean, there was a lot of really intense spiritual activity. Maybe even people would say poltergeist-type stuff. And so I didn't know I could really talk to inanimate objects, but, you know, everything has a vibration. You know, it's just kind of, you know, hooking into that. And I don't, you know, try to tell everybody to go, because maybe some of them are happy there and would be helpful in assisting people. But it really is the negative energies that really need to go on. What it was kind of interesting, what about this house? I was led up to the third story, and the owner refused to go to the third story. And I had my little smudge pot with a little sage, you know, a little smoke for clearing going up. As I got to the third flight of stairs, I heard, and I actually, she heard it too. I thought there was a fire. I said, is there a fire going on up there? She goes, the house is empty. There's no one here. And I said, well, I hear somebody actually throwing curse words down the, she goes, I can hear it too. And she goes, I'm sorry, I have to leave. I can't do this. So, you know, I know no one's going to hurt me. And I proceed to go up there and send this energy on. It was very angry and rageful. And when I walked up there, I saw like the bars of a cell, a jail. And when I went down, I said, oh, I saw bars of a cell. And she goes, well, at one time, the town had a huge fire, and this building actually became the jail. And the third story was where they kept the prisoners. And that was really kind of interesting. But, you know, I believe all of us have the ability to do clearings of energy. Always protect yourself. Call in your divine guides. Always make sure you are safe, and with the right intention, ask them respectfully to leave. And, you know, they will or they won't.
Yeah.
Sometimes you think you get them gone, and you only got a surface done. It's very interesting. It's like not a solid science, if you will, clearing properties and houses.
I would guess that it works for people who have faith in what they're doing. Some people wouldn't believe in it, would they?
No. Yeah, but, you know, I always find that quite interesting, is that the people who kind of wind up, you know, doing this or getting hold of me or ever, you know, how we connect, are the ones who really are the ones, the doubters, and really don't believe. Because whatever, you know, I think maybe they're just desperate to have something happen, and they're willing to take a shot at it, you know. It's like just recently I took on a client, and chemotherapy had made his hands and feet numb. He's a golfer, and he really wants to golf. And so, you know, I do massage and treatments, and he said, I'll give you four times. I said, okay, all right. Well, the first treatment, his feet felt like a limb waking up. Every 2 days, I work on him. Second treatment, he came out of the gym, and he wasn't stumbling. Third treatment was better. The fourth treatment, he had feeling, but just the tips of his toes were numb still. And see, you know, when they give you that, you know, that attitude kind of, you know, I just grin and say, you know, it will happen as it's supposed to. And something about this person really wanted to get well. He wanted to feel good and play golf and have his feet under him. And it can be the smallest things, and it can be the most biggest things, but it's often the ones who have the biggest question marks, I guess you will, in their mind that have the biggest miracle sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. I'd just like to ask you a question about your sensitivity to people and back to the buildings. If you are near ancient buildings, say, or such a place, say, such as Egypt, the Great Pyramid or some of the temples, do you tune in and actually see or register what happened many thousands of years ago?
I've never been to that pyramid. I've been to the ones in Mexico and was taken actually to the an area, they call it the Temple of the Butterfly, Butterfly Eagle. And when I walked into that place, it has a gazing pool. The floor is painted red. And the top is open, and it had all these symbols around the top. And I knew it immediately when I walked in. I had never seen a picture of it, didn't know what it was. When I walked into it, I had been there before. And I can walk through, and it feels like, whoop, a bubble, if you will, an energetic poof as I walk through. And I am in a different time, standing there watching what's going on. And so if it's a dimension, if it's an energy, I'm not really quite sure exactly why it happens, but a lot of times I will be sometimes I have to get tired, like I had been hiking all over Mexico and I hadn't eaten much and it was hot, and so a lot of my resistance, if you will, was kind of worn away, and I was very open. And when I walked into this temple, I knew exactly how they turned it on. I knew exactly that it was a portal for star beings and everything that it did. So I'm always really blown away. I never try to clear those energies. Those are there for a reason. You know, they are part of the grid, if you will, that I saw when that first experience out of my body, how these all connect. And they do connect. How did the ones in Mexico draw an eagle butterfly that looks just like the ones they carved and drew in New Zealand? You know, I always find that really fascinating. You know, that how they all hooked it up. It's very awesome.
So what you're saying is the Stargate that you saw in the original temple is still there today?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, it is. It is still there. And, you know... It's had so many people, so many tourists walk through it. But when you get some sensitives, there were four women that we had gone to Mexico and were drawn there. And I stood in the four corners. And the guard was kind of eyeballing us, you know, and they don't want you touching anything or doing anything, you know. And I said, since we can't visibly, you know, we can't sing or, you know, use our voice, let's use our telepathy, let's use our minds, and let's hear what we hear. And all four of us heard a chant, a song, saw a certain color, light, and vibration, and that they would fill this stargate, if you will, with water, with a gazing pool. And as the stars would track over the top of the sky, you could see them on the water, like a big mirror. And then there was these triangle stones along the top. The top is open, and it's like a veranda around it, that they would actually, it was part of the chart, if you will, the star chart. And then as we stood there, we all saw this vortex, this whirling energy, like a little whirlpool of energy start coming up and coming up. Of course, this was in the middle of the day, and then as we discussed it later, how amazing that would be to turn that thing on under the right star aspects, under the right moon, you know, with all everything that would actually turn it on. I believe it shot a beacon up through the Milky Way, through the stars, that is part of that original vision.
Do you think that knowledge, which we clearly don't have today, that is to build a temple like that, comes from many thousands of years ago, say from the Atlantean period?
Oh, it has to. You know, they all, I believe they could bilocate to each other. You know, I think they all spoke to one another, either dreams, telepathically, or they actually could move themselves. They could, they had the ability. I believe that we have, we're just remembering. We really are. We're remembering. We're bringing up our frequency to that remembering what we already knew as we have come to this earth space many, many times.
Yeah.
And some of us do it deliberately. We mindfully are working on bringing that up. Some of us start stumbling, as I did, as I just, you know, kind of fell into it or hiked into it or got to it and figured it out. One of the things my father gave me and my uncles was really good is that they taught me how to track as a child. And they would take me out and they would say, now look at this is the pheasant and see its feet and see how it went this way and this is this and this is that. And I had to learn how to follow tracks and to watch things in nature. They all knew which tree bore what fruit and what spring to drink out of. They knew all these things, and they passed it down. And one of the things I've realized, even on a spiritual journey, we become trackers. We watch. We don't get it all at once, usually. When it does all come, it's pretty nice, you know, when you get it all at once. But usually it's those small bits of information that we, I call them the puzzle pieces, that come in, and they all start fitting together. And all of a sudden, you have those wonderful aha moments, you know, that, oh, I finally get it. I understand why I exited out of the west of the medicine wheel because it goes right through a black hole in the Milky Way. How cool, you know? Why do these things always... sometimes I have to drive up there and lay down in it under the stars to get the moment.
Right. Oh.
This is not a sitting down journey for me at all. This is very... moving, hiking, traveling, you know, going places. And I'm always amazed when I get summoned again. Recently I was summoned by a tribe in Mexico and to come and be connected to their sacred altar. And I was like, well, I don't know anything about this, but this man telepathically knew all about me.
Mm-hmm.
And that just happened recently. That was in the last 4 months that I went down to Mexico with the Huichol and experienced the all-night thing and was presented to their sacred altar. Again, another sacred site, another energy, another site that goes, you know, the grid and then up.
With all of the information that you're picking up like this, do you agree, as many people think now, that we're in the last few years of the Mayan cycle and that there will be... a massive change in the cycle?
Well, you know, I've studied the calendar a lot, you know, and I talked to some archaeologists in Mexico, and actually, you know, I've looked at the calendar. What I realize is that we are so moving fast. What could take, you know, years and years and years, we are doing in moments. I mean, really. We are growing and progressing and raising. I even quit using the word vibration. It's a frequency. And we're working on these 13 DNA strands. These light color and frequencies that we are running are absolutely profound. And who knows? You know, it feels like when that calendar kicks that last number before it rotates back to all the zeros, is that, there could be something. I talked to an archaeologist in Mexico, and he said, what is the word? What is that last word on that calendar? And he says, it's cataclysm. Oh, okay, cataclysm. Mm. And when I was with the Huichol, again, what is coming? And they gave me a little different date, but really close. And they said, be in a safe place. Just be in a safe place. That's what they told me.
But now, you did speak of DNA strands in connection with perhaps teaching people how to rewire them through our glands. I think that was your expression.
Yes.
What is the idea there? How do you do that?
Well, this is really is amazing. I use it actually in my massage work because I call it a treatment, you know, and using the glands in the body, the chakras all associate with the glands, starting with the pineal, thyroid, thymus, you know, going through the glandular system of the body. By taking the 13 strands and realizing you can intuit the energy and color just by using the chakra colors, okay? So, and each strand has a little bit of an issue, maybe, you know, like starts projects, doesn't finish, you know, sabotages oneself, you know. These strands can have different things. And if you, I use a wonderful crystal, a long wand that I help people with. And, you know, you can actually go to the top of the head, take that first DNA strand, reconnect the frequency with it, vibrate the color back up. You know, that neon beautiful green is really an amazing healing color. And go through the 13 strands, reconnecting the wounds, the energies, vacancies, whatever is going on with that person. It doesn't always happen all at one time. But once I find with people, you give them that little bit of information. You give them the skill, just even when they're getting a treatment, is that they take it with them. They're working it, man. You know, they are working those strands. They are seeing those things, and they really move forward with it. And one of the wonderful things about it, on the side note, is a lot of people who have migraines, they do this, and their migraines go away. So that's very awesome.
Yes, because you believe once we start our spiritual journey that we change.
Oh, yes, absolutely. There's no getting around it. You know, like we speak differently. Sometimes when I'm in a restaurant, I have to think about how I'm speaking even so that I can order food properly. You know,
yes,
because especially when we're around people of like mind and people who we can easily speak of dimensional work, shifts and changes, you know, things that are going on. We speak easily. It's almost like a completely different language. We might be speaking English, but it's a different language that we have developed over the years, you know. And, yes, we are permanently changed, I do believe. You know, once we put our foot on the path, the universe, I love that quote from The Alchemist, the book, the universe will do everything in its power to assist us. And it isn't always pleasant. It isn't always, this is not a sweet little ride of flowers. It really is. One time I thought I was going to change my name to Digs a Hole because I was always building sweat lodges and everything, and I always had a shovel in my hand, you know. And I was digging holes constantly, you know, and I was laughing. I said, I'm going to change my name. I'm going to be Digs a Hole. You know, it's a very, you know, put yourself into it, especially now in the year of the ox. We are physically working more and moving more.
Mm.
Can I talk about, this is really cool. I think you'll really like this. So this has to go with the DNA. I met Grandfather Martin, the Hopi elder who carries the prophecies there. And there was, again, that connection. You know, he saw me, I saw him, and it was like we had just reconnected and lots of hugging and stuff going on. And he pulls me aside, and he says, you have to stay in the cornfield. I said, okay. He doesn't hear anymore, but he speaks his English. You have to be careful and listen. He says, you have to stay in the cornfield. And I said, okay, I will. And he gave me some white corn pollen. And it wasn't 3 days later, I get a phone call. I'm heading to Santa Fe to do some spiritual work. And they said, oh, there is this guy you have to meet. He grows sacred corn.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
all hooked up with this sacred corn and this ancient corn. And the corn he's growing is like off the hook, man. It is, the colors are unbelievable. So I call him up. I wind up, just like Grandfather told me, 3 days in a cornfield. And I learned about the corn, and I guess this kind of relates back to the upcoming date we have, you know, as every day rolls around, we're coming to that date, is that corn needs to be planted in a community. He has some that were spiral, planted in a spiral. But one corn stalk is not strong. They plant them, and their leaves hold each other up, and they need each other for pollination and for growth. And as I walked in that cornfield, and the singing was amazing that this corn was doing, I understood completely what Grandfather Martin was telling me, was that the cornfield are us. We are need to be connected. We need to stay close to each other. I tell my Unity brothers and sisters that Unity is my cornfield, you know. I go in and they feed me, you know. And yeah. And I understood. And this guy turns the corn sideways, and it's, I mean, the most brilliant colors you've ever seen. And he says, these are libraries, and each one holds the original DNA, each kernel. And I turned it sideways, and I watched him, and he said, just read it. I understood the connection, and the Mayan connection also, that we are from corn. And that it was another little piece that dropped in about the sacred corn. And what he said, when he brings these corn seeds to especially tribes, he grows it in the Santa Clara Pueblo, is that something happens. It reactivates their spirituality. It brings the original corn mother back to them. And again, there's another frequency. There's another piece that gets it all going. It's awesome.
It's an interesting subject. I had to smile when I read your little bit about your dream channel, that you dream about people before they even call you. What sort of experience is that?
That's, you know, that's happened to me from childhood, but it's more profound now. And so much more, I can tell you, oh, that's so-and-so on the phone. You know, that so-and-so is calling. And sometimes they'll go, oh, I've been thinking about you, and I've been wanting to call you, but you called me first, you know.
Yeah.
Because when I have the dream, I will call them. And I try not to call you in the middle of the night, you know, because as with dreaming, it will come in either morning dream or with me late at night, you know, when I early morning or when I first go to bed or before I wake up is when the dreams come in.
Yes,
and
yes.
And sometimes I'm exhausted. I feel like I have not slept all night. I tell people I've been working all night. What happens? Are you there?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, had a funny little thing happen to the phone. So,
right.
Yeah, the dreaming, and I think that is something we need to pay attention to, is when we dream. I know there's dreams that are the day stuff. Whatever the day is going through, you know, we kind of process through that. But there are dreams that are telling us information, past, present, future, and a lot of it's future, and it can be short, medium, or long future. And and you know, there's sometimes I'll go through phases where it doesn't feel like I dream a lot, and then phases where it comes in, and that's all I do. It's just dreaming, 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 you know.
Did you actually dream that I was going to send you an email and invite you onto this program?
Well, I had an intuition, more of anything, that when I saw it, I wasn't surprised. Usually how it happens for me. You know, I'm like, oh, well, there it is. And then I realized that, again, sometimes it's figuring out the puzzle pieces about how it happens.
Yes. Oh, sir. It's an interesting foresight into what is going to happen in your life, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But, you know, a lot of us who have the gift, it isn't, it's so more, much more about humanity and the people that we help than ourselves, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oftentimes, I will call on people to, you know, ooh, what do you see? You know, what do you feel about me? You know, because that just seems to be, for me personally, where the gift lies, is really about the other folks, the other people out there.
Yeah. Now, I'll ask you a question here that's related to something you've recently commented on. That is that you can talk to someone who can put their hand on another person, and you can make a contact through that link. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Right. Now, if someone came to you and they had a person there who was ill, could you actually diagnose what was wrong with them or what treatment they needed?
I don't usually work that way, but I tell you, I don't call it medical intuitive, but I can get strong intuitions about situations. I've had some amazing training physically by some of the best cancer doctors in the U.S., and for some reason it was another one of those. He was in retirement, and I needed some assistance, and all of a sudden the training came in for 2 years, training with this doctor. And sometimes I can do that, but I don't ever claim to be a medical intuitive.
No. I only asked that because I thought some people may be listening in. They may see your gift as an opportunity to help someone else who has an illness, maybe has a problem in finding a cure for it.
Right. Well, you know what I say? Oh, let's give it a try.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, if I can't, I'll try to find someone that can. You know,
yes.
I think that's part of helping each other is that we also help each other find the right and correct people.
Indeed, yes. What did you mean by saying that you came into life with a long memory?
A long memory is that I came in with memories of my past lives.
Yes.
I came in with, I would tell my parents, about people, about places. And I grew up in Southern California, and we were driving, so I could read by the time I was 3 years old. I could pick up anything and read it. and I was like just this little wild child, you know, riding horses, and in California was actually very rural. I was born in 1953, and it was orange groves and avocado groves and all this, but I was a very small child, and we were driving into Los Angeles, and I started crying, and again, here's, you know, me doing my thing, and my parents would say, "What is wrong with you?" And I would say, "Oh, close the window, it's smog, I can't breathe, and they were saying, "There's no such thing as smog, you're just making stuff up, sit down and be a good girl," you know, and I would insist, no, I can't breathe, there's bad air, you know, and so that's how it came in. I came in, my family, my aunties and my grandma always told me I was born in the wrong century, and I would tell them, no, I was there too, and they would just laugh, and, you know, we'd go on.
Oh, interesting. You seem to have taken to all this very well. I mean, some people might have been a bit disturbed to have such experiences, which, by and large, are quite different to other people's.
Well, yeah, you know, my children also, they've been raised around it, and I had a woman, she was doing some training, and she was at my house in Arizona, and we all went to bed, and she was sleeping on the futon in the living room, and I had a beautiful night's sleep, and I woke up, and she was huddled up in the middle of the futon, she goes, how do you live in this house, and I was like, excuse me, she goes, the cupboards were opening and closing, the doors were rattling, things were flying around the house all night. And I guess so used to it.
Dear me.
That now, it didn't faze any of us.
Janie, time's absolutely flowing by.
Oh,
you're terrifically
interesting. Oh, that was quick.
We've got to the point where I want you to mention your website. And if you want to give out your email address, you can.
Oh,
and
lovely.
As you do personal or take personal calls or give personal advice, perhaps you may like to give out the appropriate telephone number. So go ahead and tell our listeners whatever you want to put over.
We have a new website, and it's www.under/wire.com, underwire.com, and it is a center my friend Diana and I are putting together for people to come to. It's here on a horse ranch in Arizona. It's beautiful. So that's underwire.com. And my email is jmae29@hotmail.com. I'm Janie May, jmae29@hotmail.com.
Right, now let me just confirm this email address, because it's _wire, isn't it? Not underwire as one word.
Under-wire.
Hyphen wire?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yes, there's a slash, under-wire.com.
Right, okay, under hyphen. Right, I wanted to clear that up because as soon as you get little bits in the middle of the word,
yes,
right,
I know, I know.
Wrong. Okay,
yes.
You've given the email address. Do you have a telephone number for people who
I just
want to
have a cell
you?
Phone. I usually don't put it out, but if they email me, and I will connect with them, absolutely.
That's fine, okay. That's brilliant. I've got to the point now where I've possibly got a couple of minutes left to announce next week's guest.
Okay.
Thank you immensely for coming on to the program.
You bet. Anytime.
It's been delightful to have you on, and you're terrifically interesting, which is the whole idea, I think.
I hope so. And journey on. Take care.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Janie, thank you very much. Right, friends, that was a very interesting interview. My guest next week will be Rebecca Covington. She was a psychic as a young child. She experienced voices, visions, and had out-of-the-body journeys. And as she grew up, she found she was able to communicate with non-physical beings until in 1996 she was contacted by a group of entities who called themselves Elishiva. So that should prove to be another very interesting program, so I hope you can be with me. Thank you for being with me today. God bless you all. Thank you.